Welcome back to BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare educational and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host, Brian Moore. This is the final part of a mini-series looking at BSA as we celebrate the firm's 50-year anniversary. In this episode, I'm joined by Tim Spence and Sam Jackson to talk about what's next for BSA. They have both been guests on the show previously, talking about topics like local leadership and national expertise, the future of healing, and serving the client's best interest, if you'd like to check out other conversations with them. Tim Spence is the CEO of BSA and graduated from the University of Southern California with a bachelor's degree of architecture. He holds several licenses and certifications, including AIA, FACHA, NCARB, LEED AP, BD+, and is a Lean Six Sigma Yellow Belt. Sam Jackson is the president of BSA and graduated from Rose-Hulman Institute of Technology and with a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering. He also earned his MBA from Indiana University's Kelley School of Business. Sam has worked at BSA his entire career, holding a number of positions, including principal, director of engineering, and chief operations officer. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Happy to be here.
Well, I want to close out this mini-series celebrating BSA's 50th. With an eye to the future. So we just had Tim Bashi and Justin Beadle on in our last episode talking about design that inspires what's next. So for you guys, as we celebrate our 50th, what does this milestone mean to each of you personally?
Well, it's huge, 50 years. And as I think back through my career, which has spanned now 27 years, and think about the growth of the firm, it's really grown out of an Indiana firm to a Midwest regional firm to now really a national firm. Given the client base we have, the project base we have, the talent we're attracting, being sought after across the country and not just in the Midwest, I think is a sign of really the growth of and the expertise of the firm and how deep-rooted our culture is throughout the company.
Just maybe add on to that, Sam. I think there's something about 50 years that it just kind of says it's enduring. It's an enduring idea. So it's, we've endured, we've built this lasting value, and we've impacted a lot of lives across our markets. I think the thing that I've been thinking about is it's more of a launch pad and a moment to kind of say, hey, we're not going to rest on our legacy, but there's a genuine sense in my mind and in my heart that our best days are ahead. And I say that a lot, like the future is brighter than the past. And so while this is an anniversary, that it's a celebration, all those good things, I think it's a bold invitation to step into the future.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. I feel like with birthdays, anniversaries, like in our personal lives too, you know, numbers that end in fives and zeros tend to bring reflection, right? And 50 is a big one. So how would you characterize the current state of BSA, Tim, as it marks this significant anniversary?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this question you posed here. And I think the biggest thing that I would say is it feels like our current state's an inflection point, like a really interesting one. And I think that's kind of what you were getting at, Sam. We've done a lot of intentional work over the last few years to get here. And I'll just name a few things like transitioning to an ESOP, implementing the EOS entrepreneurial operating system, building out our one BSA structure, elevating design and planning, just to kind of name a few. But these weren't just internal changes. They were really foundational. And now we're beginning to see those results. And so it's creating this momentum that's really interesting. And we're growing in smart and exciting ways. And so the 50th anniversary is not just about longevity, but it's more about beginning a new era.
Tim, as CEO, what do you see as BSA's greatest strengths as you, like you said, kind of look forward to the future?
It's hard to answer this question without having my own bias. So I'm just going to say that right off the top.
Okay.
But I am a purpose person. I came to BSA because of its purpose. And so I think that's our greatest strength is we're a purpose-driven firm. We operate with a deep sense of clarity because of that. We have a mission, vision, and a set of values that truly guide us. And our mission, creating inspired solutions that improve lives, is not just about buildings. It's about outcomes. And I think everyone everyone internalizes that at the firm and believes in it. And it's really pretty amazing the way that everyone just rallies around that idea. You know, I think that's in contrast to a lot of organizations where that just becomes a line and it's kind of pointed at or said or, you know, in a very non-passionate way. But so I think for me, that's the strength and everything kind of evolves from there.
Tim, to stay with you for a second, how do you think you've been in the CEO role now a little over 2 years? How has your vision for BSA evolved since stepping into the CEO role?
I think the thing that has evolved for me is a little bit of building on this idea that the future is better than the past. I think early in my career, people used to ask me at reviews, like, what do you want to do in 5 or 10 years? And that question always kind of annoyed me because I would say I'm grateful for where we are, but I feel like I have more to give. And stepping into the CEO role, I find myself feeling that same way about BSA. We've built something special. It's a firm with clear purpose, a distinct position in the market, and a culture that truly believes in improving lives. And what's evolved, at least in my role, is my recognition of just how much upward potential we have. We've carved out a space that's uniquely suited for that. Something we're deeply passionate about, something that we can be the best in the world at, something that drives our economic engine, and the flywheel is turning. And that part is exciting. So as we think about, like, how do we leverage this and how do we grow it, I just think that the future is kind of unbounded. And that's the part as a CEO that I look at to say, wow, got something special. How do we make it run greater than it is right now?
Well, and for our listeners, if you can't tell, Tim being the CEO, you're painting vision. And I feel like our structure is unique in the sense that you two work very closely together. So then that transitions over to Sam in your role as president. What operational priorities are you focusing on to position BSA for this continued success that Tim's kind of talking about?
It's really about maintaining across the firm, when we're adding all these people and all these studios and new people, the exceptional client service and quality of design and communication of design, verbally, written, graphically, whatever, across the board. It's a very high bar. And it's a very hard thing to maintain over time. And it requires constant attention. New people obviously need to be trained on the way we do things, what our expectations are. Everyone's fully capable of doing it. It's just a matter of, you know, getting them trained up and giving them the tools and the resources and a mentor and a coach and all those things. And then developing them along their career with the right project opportunities and clients and things. But really just not ever allowing mediocrity to creep into the organization, keeping everybody at a high level. Operationally, I think that's it. And so when you apply that thinking to the principals who are out owning the client relationships, what does that mean? Well, it means we're going after the top tier clients who value us for our expertise. And I don't care about the size of the client. I care about how they look at us, right? They value us as a partner, as an expert of what we can bring to the table and help them partner with them to achieve their goals in the built environment. But also on the discipline side, everybody across the board getting the work done, making sure they're up to snuff.
That's a great point. So let's shift to look at those core sectors a little bit. You talked about expertise. We're very focused in healthcare, higher education, and research. And Tim, you were on earlier this year to talk about the future of feeling. So you may not want to go over the healthcare side as much. Sam, you may have some thoughts on that. How do you see these markets evolving?
Well, you know, healthcare is going to continue to evolve the way it's been evolving over the past decade or more. Surgeries, procedures are becoming less and less invasive. Recovery times are quicker, more outpatient-based care. The built environment, though, in terms of from a patient's experience for wayfinding, you know, elements that make them more comfortable and less stressed are always that they're going to apply to whatever environment they're in. On the mechanical, electrical, plumbing side of things, the attention to details of reliability, redundancy, the cleanliness of the spaces. I don't care where you're getting your knee replaced or your heart valves installed or whatever. It's always got to be at the same level. So a lot of the technical side of what we do is going to apply whether it's inpatient or outpatient. It'll just shift a little bit. The inpatient side is going to become more critical, which we're already seeing. Environmental considerations are having a little bit of a fight where we're trying to think, make everything more efficient, more sustainable, net zero, carbon neutral, and all that. But at the same time, you've got to have heating and cooling year round in environments where you didn't used to in the past.
Right.
Recent catastrophic events have proven how necessary, cooling is in the summertime when, it's never been a consideration. So things like that are going to continue to evolve. Student learning is becoming much more dynamic. If you look at the recent spaces we've built and designed, it's much more about creating spaces where students can interact and mingle. And it's not from your dorm room to your classroom and to the lab and back. So the much more active social spaces, active learning, just chances to make it comfortable and convenient to spend more time together.
If I had to summarize, I would just say, they're kind of changing really quickly and almost at an inflection point of their own. I think the three themes that I feel like are, Sam, you kind of hit on this, the experiential piece, particularly in the student population, like what that's like. But I see that in healthcare as well. I see it also in research. Like it used to be okay to sequester a researcher off of no access to natural light and some of those things, that's not acceptable anymore. So thinking about the kind of experience that pushes into like the outcomes, how do we make those healing, learning, discovery outcomes better? The other thing that I would just say is the technological integration. Sam, you were again kind of talking about that there is technology that is being introduced that is completely changing the game. And the integration of that into smart buildings and smart environments and all of those kind of things is just going to be amazing. We all just got off a little bit of training on AI for our internal office here. And it's amazing to see that integration happening right within our firm. And the last thing I would just say is the walls are coming down between healing, learning, discovery in really interesting ways. Mm. And I think that convergence across disciplines is pretty fascinating. I think it'll lead to some powerful innovations.
So you guys have now talked a little bit about how these markets are evolving. Obviously, when a market evolves, client needs shift. So how are we positioning ourselves to adapting client needs?
That's a good question. So we've got some clients who are on the forefront and pushing the envelope on progressive care, right? So we're working with them, learning together, figuring out what's working, what's not working. And the benefit of the breadth of our services across the country is we can take lessons learned from those who have the ability to, push into the next era of whatever, healing, learning, discovery, and take those lessons to other places in terms of what's worked and what's not worked. Mm-hmm. Put it into our collective database of our standards, of why we're starting from a certain point and applying it to every situation. Every client's different. Every culture is different. All the people are different. The demographics are slightly different. How do we take what we know to be true and apply it to every client? That's how we, stay at the forefront.
Good.
It's always different. It's never the same.
I think about how BSA is uniquely positioned to help clients with the ability to adapt. And I think you hit on that, Sam, with the national expertise, but I think a critical component of that is also the local leadership. So it's really the deep understanding of that client that comes from living with them. And then, as you said, being able to take ideas that come across the entire nation and sometimes internationally and be able to filter those ideas. I think it's also the deep knowledge of healing, learning, discovery, which is really important because, again, we talked about the walls coming down between those. And so they're they're building into each other in interesting ways. And then the last I would say is I just enjoy having this conversation with Sam because he approaches the world differently than I do as an engineer. And I do think it gets back to this whole interdisciplinary mindset that is unique to BSA. It's unique because we have always had a president and a CEO that come from different sides of the aisle, if you want to describe it that way. And I think it goes all the way down through our whole structure.
Very good point. Go ahead, Sam.
Sorry, Tim, you made me think also how we're uniquely positioned. You know, we're one firm across the country. Our experts spend a lot of time together, our principals, our disciplines spend a lot of time together. So what I talked about earlier about being able to take lessons learned from one place and translate it to another is easy. We've got a structure built around making sure everybody is up to speed on the latest and greatest. And if they've got a particular client or opportunity pursuit project that requires an expertise that they don't have, they know who to go talk to about getting it and bringing it part of the team. And we've got a structure that makes that super easy to do with no roadblocks. So that's partly, we've been intentional to accomplish the things that Tim is talking about.
That's a really good point. And I want to pivot back really quick. Tim, you had mentioned AI. Tim Bashi, like I mentioned at the beginning, was just on the last episode and talked a little bit about our company's human-centered approach to AI. Can you both maybe throw in a few thoughts about how you see this evolving? I mean, to me, there's two components. One that you just talked about, Tim, which is we got a little AI training for ourselves and how it's going to impact the way that we work. And then there's the external part of, you know, the buildings that we're designing and how they're incorporating AI and some of the smart building technology.
Yeah, I think as we've done a lot of thinking about this over the last year or two here, and it's pretty exciting to me. I think the thing that has grounded us throughout this whole discussion has been that AI is not a substitute. It's augmenting the human potential. And so that's why we've been intentional about taking more of a human-centered approach to artificial intelligence. I'm sure Tim covered that a bit, but that's our strategic roadmap, is not just outlining how we're going to use those tools, but it's also talking about the why. It's to empower people to be more effective, more creative, and more impactful in their work. And so I just love the fact that we're going down that road. And that was even, again, covered just a half an hour ago in our training as those exact words. But we're also prioritizing ethical use, transparency, human oversight. And I think the biggest thing I would say about AI is it feels to me like it's not just a tech upgrade. It's like revolutionary. And, you know, who knows where it ultimately takes us. But I guess I'm a glass half full on this particular issue, that I think it's a pretty exciting future.
Sam, where are you at? Half full, half empty?
Oh, definitely half full. I agree with what Tim said. It's initially, now I think of it as an accelerator, in that it's allowing people to do what they do faster and more efficiently. And the part I love about that is anything we can do that removes stress from people. And it's not just about the time, it's about the frustration of, I know this exists, I can't find it, where is it? I mean, the ability for AI to do that and find stuff, and for it to start, you know, help with drafting any kind of written document, proofreading, you know, technical papers or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, trust but verify, right? We all know AI is prone to mistakes. It's still in its infancy, but the ability for it to make people's lives easier and do what they do best is what I'm excited about. And I see that evolving over time and getting better and better.
Let's transition a little bit and talk about what does growth mean for BSA in the coming years? And by that, I mean, is it about size? Is it about impact, capabilities, or something else, or a collection of thereof?
Yes. I think about it in two dimensions, and we've been talking about this a lot, that it's both horizontal growth, which is really about kind of spreading out across the country, geographic diversification. This is a journey that we started in the early 2000s with a forward-thinking board, and that saw the value of being closer to their clients and talent across the country. And so this not only creates resilience for us, but it also deepens our understanding of regional markets and communities. So that's kind of this horizontal growth. I also think about it in terms of vertical, and I will say that Sam and I have had the benefit of working alongside of really amazing people on our leadership team. One of those is Tim Bashi, and he's pushing us to think about how to expand the depth and breadth of our expertise. So that's that vertical growth from planning and design to specialized areas like sustainability, high performance environments, technology, design. It's really about sharpening that edge of what we bring to every project and delivering more value for our clients. And so that's, in my mind, that's what growth entails.
Yeah, I think it's both breadth and depth. It's a win-win. It's a yes and. And the more focused we are and the better we are at what we're focused on, and what's been proven to me over the past 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, is the opportunities increase. They don't decrease. And with that means that we get to pick and choose and be choosy about where we're going to grow. And it can be periodic. Sometimes it's going to be, we need to grow geographically. Sometimes it's going to be an expertise-based growth, depending on, you know, where we think the markets are going or the opportunities are or where we're at in a certain area. But part of it for me is keeping an open mind to what makes us better at what we want to be the best at. And it goes back to what Tim started with, which is our mission, our purpose, and our focus. I would say anything that makes us better at those things and the things that we love to do and the clients we love to serve will grow.
Tim, you just mentioned the vertical and horizontal growth. How are you thinking about talent acquisition and development for BSA as we move forward?
Yeah, I think that it kind of goes back to this fundamental belief that everyone has a unique ability. And this is something that Dan Sullivan, who's a business coach, has talked a lot about, written a lot about. I had the chance to go through Strategic Coach for about a year. And I feel like our responsibility as leaders is to create an environment where that ability can thrive. And so we've worked really hard to build a firm that puts people at the center. Sam, you talked about the structure that empowers employee owners to find their niche and take ownership of that growth and make meaningful contributions. So I think the piece that's been added to here lately is that our momentum is attracting incredible talent in addition to that. So people are in our structure, if you want to call it that, in part of our company. And then we're attracting this incredible talent in addition, because people want to be a part of something that's evolving and purposeful, and they see the opportunity not just to join a firm, but also help write the next story of its chapter. So that those two parts to me are really incredible. You know, we're developing the people that we have, and then we're acquiring amazing people that are pushing the people that we have even further.
So we've been talking about, you know, growth in the aspect of more challenging work within our three main markets and talking about bringing people on. So Sam, I'm going to move towards asking, like, how does BSA maintain quality? We've, along with client focus through these periods of growth, we've been growing a lot and doing more challenging work over the last, you know, several years. So as we continue to grow and we're adding new people, how do we maintain that quality?
Well, we've got certainly some processes in place and some standards that really require a lot of reviews and quality controls and things from people who are qualified to do that. That's kind of like the basic stuff, right? The more important thing is we look for the right people who have an innate sense of doing things the right way, and they're not happy delivering work that's substandard or not quite finished or almost done. We want people who know what 100% right looks like. And when you have a nice base of those people, we charge them and we expect them to train people below them to bring them up to deliver that same level of quality. So it's built into the culture by hiring the right people and putting them in the right seats to succeed and having them coach and mentor. And you just do that on the job, right? It's not letting a young professional put out something that's not done. was about helping them understand what it means to fully detail and make sure the specs are right and all the plan notes are clear and written well and the design intent is communicated. And that's not just at the end of construction documents. That begins all the way at the very beginning with, you know, pre-design and schematic design. What do those graphics look like? Which looks completely different than the final product that the contractors get, but it's still equally important because it's setting the basis. So if you've got things that are communicated there incorrectly, your final product's going to be wrong, right? So it's got to, the beginning stuff has to look right too, all the way through to the end. So it's about making sure we've got and maintain that diligence of finding the right people who know what that looks like. And then, you know, making sure the right people are developing the right younger people,
right,
to continue that going.
So I feel like C-suite type folks can get a bad rap sometimes from looking at success based solely on financials. And I feel like you've both done a really good job here of talking about culture and our mission, especially of creating inspired solutions that improve lives. So I'm going to ask you both, how do you measure impact beyond financial metrics?
I'll take a stab at that. I've always said that BSA is going to be a well-run company. I think it's in our DNA and we make no apologies for it. And I think that's a really wonderful thing. But like you said, if you have a well-run company without something greater, a greater purpose, it's like an attractive person without a soul. It's only a part of the piece, and really the piece that's missing is that success that comes through looking through the lens of our mission, which is the improving lives, if I had to shorten it. So I for me, that means asking a simple question: how many lives are we improving? And we always talk about it in concentric circles. You know, I think the closest circle to all of us are the people that we work with every day. If those people aren't feeling like their lives and the lives of their families are improved, then we're failing. And then outside of that circle is our clients and their customers. And those are the people that we serve. If we're not making their lives better, if we're not improving the healing, learning, and discovery that is going on in their space, then it's, you know, we're failing. And then the third one that I like to add, because I feel like this is one that gets missed a lot when you think about companies, is you think about the bigger whole. You know, what is the field that we're playing in here? And that always involves our community. If our community doesn't come along with us and enjoy some of the success that we're enjoying, and we've missed the boat. And I think that's a really important piece. So I guess to summarize there, I feel like it's measured in stories and outcomes, and the degree to which, you know, Brian, you do an awesome job at helping us tell those stories around about how the work is making a difference.
I'll internalize that a little bit. Every month, the executive leadership team travels to a different studio, and we meet with the entire studio and then the leadership team there. And we ask them for, you know, just an update on the projects that they're working on. And we already have a sense, but we want to hear it from them. Part of what I look at are how excited our people are about the projects they're working on. And then I match that up with how excited leadership is with the projects they're working on. With through the filter of what Tim just talked about, are we improving lives? Are these projects giving us the opportunity to make the community better, to heal, learn, and discover, right? All those things we always talk about. Because when the projects and clients are giving us the right opportunities and our people are excited to be working on those opportunities, everybody's successful, everybody's happy. That, to me, that's success. From the very beginning, we've had a saying, you know, if we take care of our people and our people take care of our clients will take care of us. You got to filter that and be purposeful about it. Again, back to what Tim was talking about. If we take care of the right people take care of the right clients will take care of us. As long as we keep that circle going, that's the flywheel that Tim's talking about. That just self-perpetuates, right? The financial side is just an indicator that you're doing everything else right.
Mm-hmm.
If we do all that other stuff, we'll be fine. And we always have been.
Well, one of the things I feel like I enjoy the most about working with the two of you and when we're together as a leadership team is there's always a focus on solving challenges and looking to the future. So asking you both in a very public setting, but what do you see as the biggest challenges facing BSA over the next 5 to 10 years?
You know, the thing I've seen in almost every industry I've come across the, as we travel across the country, and not just design, construction, healthcare, learning, everything, it's really a lack of qualified staff to do the work. And I don't see that trend changing in the near future. So I think being a top place to work, which we are, I think being focused on our culture, which we've talked a lot about today, helps not just with retention, which is currently at a historic low for us,
right?
Like a third of the industry average. It also helps to attract the talent we want to attract, both at an experience level and, you know, coming out of college, people are going to work here. So I think it'll be a little bit marginally easier for us, right? Even though I think it's going to continue to be a problem. And then it's all the other stuff. It's the rising costs of everything, which makes, it's really an opportunity for us because it makes our ability to help a client make the right decisions to have the biggest impact with their dollars, bang for their buck, so that they can make the right decisions. I think that's just going to continue to make us more and more sought after.
You may be leaning in on my next question a little bit there at the end. How are you guys preparing the organization to navigate economic cycles? I mean, I feel like we've already done it a little bit, especially over the last few years and post-COVID, but, you know, it's tough to predict those moving forward. So it's not like you're future-proofing in a sense, but you're trying to prepare as much as you can for industry disruptions and economic cycles. So what are your thoughts on that?
I would just say that I think Sam and I have been around long enough in this industry to know that these are going to happen. They're inevitable, right? And
right.
So how we prepare for them, how we respond to them makes all the difference. And I think that's one of the things that we've spent a lot of time doing over the last few years since COVID is just getting our organization in healthy shape to be able to withstand that. So I think that's kind of one component. The other component, though, I think is just making more of a resilient business across the board. And I'll give some examples here. I think the ESOP, for instance, we're not beholden to outside shareholders that are all about the dollar at the end of the day, which allows us to make decisions for the long-term health of the firm. So I think that's one piece. We've diversified across markets, geographies, services, which gives us flexibility. And we've been seeing this lately where it's not just about taking one pie and dividing it up into more slices. It's about creating more pies. And the ability to do that has kept our income streams much more diverse, which is really helpful. Last one, I'll probably jump in on Sam's parade here a little bit, but he does this really well, is the EOS system, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, which has, in my mind, I watch Sam as the president who is the implementer. And it's allowing us as an organization to stay more focused and accountable and adaptable and just providing clarity into where we're going and how we get there. And I think those things are really, really important. If I back out a little bit here, we've created more of a resilient business model. And those are some of the things in my mind that have contributed.
So my last question. As we're looking to the future, as we're building on this 50-year legacy of BSA, what do you hope the company and the firm will be known for when it celebrates, let's say, its 75th or 100th anniversary?
I think some of our biggest, best clients now praise us for our expertise, our understanding, our leadership, not just thought leadership, but leadership and walking them through the design process, getting it to construction, making sure their goals are met in a way that is better than what they envisioned going into it. I envision that mentality being across the board with all of our clients. The more of that we get, and that's when I talked earlier about having the right clients, it's those clients who value that part of us that we bring to the table and are open to the conversation that we're going to challenge, not them, but really understand their goals and help them make sure they're making the right decisions to achieve their goals. Because a lot of times it's different than even our own initial perceptions as we start to evaluate options and outcomes and look at the research and what works and what doesn't work. just bringing that level of expertise, I think looking for the right clients who value that and will seek us out for that, I think across the board is just more of that.
It's good.
I think this whole 50-year celebration, it would be interesting if we could teleport back to having this conversation with our founders and say, what do you see for the next 50 years? And I think the reality is that a lot of things would change. Like there are some things that I'm thinking about, like human-centered design and intelligent structures and technology-infused design, all these kind of things that we talk about. But I think that in just looking what has endured during these first 50 years, I think about like, I hope that we're a firm that stays grounded in our mission, that we're purpose-driven, we're people first, we're uncompromising in our values, that we never lost our curiosity, our humility, and our belief in what's possible. And so 50 years from now, I guess I'd like to be known that we're just not in it for the buildings we design, but that we've touched the lives of countless people and we've helped shape a really interesting future. And so I think that that's maybe a legacy worth celebrating because it's really where we are right now. We're celebrating like these threads that we've pulled forward from our founders.
Yeah, that's a really good way to wrap it up. Well, I wanted to say thanks to both of you again for joining me. It's always fun talking to you. And I'm excited to continue to work with both of you as we come up on some new horizons for the firm.
Thanks,
so Brian. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Tim and Sam again for joining me on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with them both on LinkedIn. If you'd like to learn more about BSA, we encourage you to visit our website at bsadesign.com. The show notes include a link to contact us for more information. Be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. We've got more content and project stories to share on social media, so be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and X. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.